Okay. So we had mentioned, just to finish off one issue, we had mentioned that there is a general question to be asked about whether the prohibition of Bishul on Shabbos is focused specifically on the Maisa, or whether it's focused more on the result and some of the possible ramifications that might have. We ended that point off by noting that the topic that we'll get to, the very, it's hard to avoid these phrases, the very hot topic of Klisheni, or I guess the questionably hot topic of Klisheni, is possibly related to the question. We saw that Rashi has a language when talking about Bishul Bachama, that it's not Derech Bishul, and as we discussed, as Moshe and others discussed, that this is not the kind of usage you sometimes find in Hilchos Shabbos, that if you do something, let's say, with a Shinoi, or a Lo Kederech, a backwards kind of way, so then you're putter in the sense of it still being prohibited. That doesn't sound like what we're talking about here. Here it sounds like we're saying that it's not the malacha at all, that the malacha has a certain fashion to it and a certain way of doing it. And if it's not that, then it's going to be deficient in its core aspect, its core identity as a malacha. The Kiryas Sefer of the Ma'bit understands that the issue of Bishul Bachama simply goes to the Mishkan. That in the Mishkan, that was not how things were done, and therefore it fails on the Malacha standard from that perspective. Of course, as we've mentioned, what exactly was the role of Bishul in the Mishkan is itself a machlokes, but we can assume that it didn't involve Bishul Bachama, whatever the definition is. So says the Kiryas Sefer, it's going to fail for that reason. So that could affect other things. In the Sefer Primosha, it's a nice contemporary Sefer on the Malachos. He has many volumes on many things, but he has a nice Sefer on the Malachos of Shabbos. He has a nice, relatively short essay on Bishul. So he points out that a nafkamina between Rashi's understanding and the Kiryas Sefer's understanding would be the other areas of halacha where Bishul is prohibited. Mentioning, for example, Bishul Basa B'chalav, arguing that if the issue of Bishul Bachama is not Derech Bishul, then okay, maybe Basa B'chalav as well, it's not Derech Bishul. But if the issue is that it's not what was done in the Mishkan, then presumably that should only have heard it from a Shabbos perspective, but not as far as other Yisurim and the Torah are concerned, where there isn't any Mishkan relevance. However, one can take that point a little bit further and note, I think we've mentioned in various contexts, that maybe when it comes to Bishul Basa B'chalav, the whole focus is different anyway. Because Bishul Basa B'chalav, I think we've mentioned this, I think we had some opportunities to take note of this. I know last week we mentioned more possible comparisons and contrasts with Bishul B'Shabbos and Bishul Akum. But in terms of Bishul Basa B'chalav specifically, so there is what to discuss, if maybe in the context of the Shnayim Shavsot, we mentioned this, but that there is a case to be made that Bishul Basa B'chalav is really very different than Malachos of Shabbos, because there, the way the Rambam sounds like when he talks about Bishul Basa B'chalav, the reason the Torah prohibited cooking meat and milk is so that we shouldn't come to eat it. And therefore, there is much more of a result focus. That we don't want to create this concoction because it's a michshol. It's a michshol on a level of the Torah. The Torah prohibits it specifically. But if we understand this, as many read this Rambam to be saying, it's a siag d'oraisa, I think we've mentioned that concept recently as well, that Bishul Basa B'chalav, albeit a specific prohibition in the Torah, is there to protect us from a different avera, i.e. eating Basa B'chalav. So then it's really the contrast to Malachos Shabbos in general, and perhaps Malachos Bishul as well. That maybe Bishul Basa B'chalav is all about what is created, and Bishul B'Shabbos, especially as a Malacha, is focused perhaps on the Maisa. And therefore, maybe we could say at once, even without looking to the Kiryas Sefer's point about it going from the Mishkan, even if we just use Rashi, there's room to say that there could be a very big difference between how we would define Bishul as far as Shabbos is concerned and Bishul as far as something like Basa B'chalav, and other concepts could fall anywhere in the middle. But Shabbos and Basu B'Chalas may represent two opposite extremes here. We also started to discuss the question of the different categories of Bishul, and we noted about Willig's observation that it seems like the Rambam is essentially laying down three categories, two that are evident from the Gemara, Bishul and Afia, and then adding a third one, the idea of heating up water. And we discussed why it is that heating up water gets a special category. And we noted that it is different, this is what Balil discusses, that it is different in that there doesn't seem to be any definition of Bishul by water that is consistent with the definition that we find in other contexts. And that when it comes to food, the food is, let's say, softened through the heating process. We saw that the Rambam's language may allow for either softening or hardening, but some type of substantial change like that, while water doesn't seem to go through that kind of change. Water only seems to change temperature-wise, and once it cools down, apparently it reverts back to its initial state, which, as we'll get into today, is going to affect its status as far as Bishul Acher Bishul is concerned. So that distinction led to the assumption that there is a whole other category for Bishul B'Mayim, that it's not on the same track as Bishul when it regards to food. And therefore, you can't derive principles from one to the other. So we saw, for example, in Machlokas, about whether the prohibition of Bishul applies as long as you're improving something, or only as long as you're making it edible, i.e. mindful of Andrew's side. But once you pass that point, there's no further issue of Bishul. Right, which we saw was Machlokas Rishonim. And the question was, well, what about water? Water, we know, was a prohibition of cooking. Clearly, it's edible without being cooked. So if there's a prohibition of cooking, doesn't that show you that there's a prohibition even if it's already edible? And then we mentioned the Prima Gaudium's explanation that no, water is a whole different parsha because it's got its own category, as evident by the fact that it doesn't change. It just gets hotter and colder. So therefore, water has its own rules, and it's not going to be in the same category as food. Now, there are some angles to pick up from that point. Everyone's good so far? Everyone's on the same page? So there are some angles that one could disagree with that premise.
That they're not comparable in water?
Yeah, that maybe one could say that water actually is comparable to food. So you could come at it from at least two different angles. First, I didn't put this on the Marmar Komos. They debated whether I should print it out and give it to you, but it's a very complicated context. I know the Marmar Komos are complicated enough already. I'll tell you this Marmar Komos and you can look it up afterwards. But there is a very out-of-context comment, the Ran, in his drushos. Right? The Ran is not usually, in the drushos, Ran rather, is not usually where you look for Halacha Shabbos. These are more philosophically oriented essays, but it happens to be in Drush Ches, where he talks a little bit about Mei Meriva, and he talks about some of the Nisim and issues of Aaron and Moshe. Feel free to read the whole drasha. But there's one paragraph there where he says something which may be relevant to this discussion, that he assumes when water is heated up, again, feel free, you'll have to take my word for it, that it somehow comes up in the context of one of his rushes. You can definitely take a look afterwards. That when water is heated up and then cooled down, it's not the same as it was originally. That cooking has an effect on the water, and that effect will manifest itself, he assumes, in that the water will heat up more quickly a second time. In other words, according to the Ran, the perception that we have that water does not change when it's cooked, that it's only a matter of the temperature, there's nothing mamushus there. So the Ran assumes that's not the case. Ron assumes that there is actually some type of a chemical change to the water that goes beyond the temperature. The water is different now, and that even after it's cooled down, it's still different. And that will express itself in the fact that you'll have an easier time heating it up the second time.
Hi. I mean, if we could ask a scientist, a water scientist, were that true, this is a broader question, I suppose.
Right.
But should we pay attention to this one?
So, yes and no. So I think it's interesting that you'll see that this Ron probably manifests itself in other halachas where he seems to be not accepted the halacha, and probably because the issue that you're getting at, that it doesn't seem to accord with our scientific understanding. So there's really two questions you could ask on this. That one is, to what extent will the scientific knowledge impact things? And the answer is probably significantly, because this is not something that's explicit in Chazal, where you can open up the whole question of what role does the scientific knowledge play a part. Here you're talking about assumptions and Rishonim. We'll see a little bit that's interesting, the whole discussion is Bishul Acher Bishul. We really have to rely heavily on post-Talmudic sources in order to really have the discussion, which itself is interesting. But certainly once you get into the Rishonim, who are making assumptions based on their scientific understanding, so you certainly have room to evaluate it based on that. It also then raises a different question, which, separate from the halachic applicability of going from the knowledge of the science, but in general, when we see a machlokas, so we tend to not want to assume that the machlokas is a machlokas in Metzius, separate from the question of how the correct knowledge affects what the halacha should be. But we like to assume the machlokas is more lumdish in nature. However, that's true usually when it's machlokas in the Gemara, it's machlokas tanoim, machlokas amoroim. So then we assume that Chazal recorded their machlokas because the machlokas represents something in the halacha and not just a debate as far as the reality. Well, once you get to the Rishonim, again, the Rishonim are passing the halacha, so they could theoretically be arguing on a reality question. So it seems like there is a difference in understanding of the reality here. And if you look at that Ron, and it's really interesting because, again, it comes from such a different context, but it may be relevant to this, as we'll see in a few minutes, that the Ron doesn't agree with this premise that we take for granted, that there is no actual change to wind. So that's one perspective that one could then say, okay, so then water is not really different than food, that you do somehow, it is being softened or being hardened. We don't perceive it, that it feels we're not sensitive enough when we're holding a cup of water to know how it's changed physically, but apparently it has. Another angle to look at it, which is also interesting, if you look at the Magen Avraham, which I don't think I put on here, this is something I can give you a look at tomorrow, but there is a way to read the Rambam that water is not the way we assume, that it's not that you are chayiv automatically for cooking water. Now we know the Gemara does make it clear that there is a chayiv bishul when it comes to water, and there are many indications that there's a chayiv bishul when it comes to water, even beyond the Gemara's. But it could be that we have to figure out the context of where that's true. So the Magen Avraham, in basically addressing this issue, again, I'll probably recall it for tomorrow, Magen Avraham, but if not, can send it around for tomorrow. But the Magen Avraham considers two possibilities why there is a chiyuv for cooking water if water is edible raw. So one perspective he offers is that even if it's edible raw, it's much better warm. It's obviously a question of taste. But he assumes that it's not comparable. He writes that one possibility is that it's not comparable to peiros, that peiros are literally edible raw, while water is significantly better when it's cooked. But another possibility, would be very important if this were true, is that maybe we're only talking about, when we talk about bishul for water, we only mean that when you need the water, let's say, for washing something, where you need the water to be hot. But he considers the possibility that if you're interested in drinking the water and you cook it, you make it hot, maybe taka arpak.
The halacha in the Mishnah seems to be cooking spices.
Well, again, we're not 100% sure what the Malach of the Mishkan was. Right? That's
the assumption of the Gemara, isn't that?
That's what it sounds like, yeah. So you say, so if it's cooking spices, so then we're cooking vegetables.
It gives it a call. It
seems it's not for washing things. It's, I mean, it's not necessarily...
Well, in Mishkan, you cooked vegetables.
Oh, that, okay.
Right, so that's different than what it would begin with.
They cooked vegetables in the Mishkan?
They cooked them to get the dyes out of them.
Oh, I was thinking, I called it spices.
Right, so they cook that in order to get the substance they're going to make the color out of, which itself is an interesting point, which we'll come back to in a minute. But I don't know if it necessarily calls into question at this point in terms of drinking water. So that's a very big chiddush what the Magen Avraham is considering there, that one would actually be potter for cooking drinking water according to that answer in the Magen Avraham, because you're right, Taka, there is no additional change in it, and the water is edible in its cold state. So the whole idea of there being a chiyuv for cooking water is only when you're using it for something that requires it to be hot. Are you?
What exactly is the reason you are cooking the water that you want to use to drink? Is it like you're trying to get the bacteria out? Because if that would be the case,
that would also be something to consider.
Would that be like fixing?
That may also involve other things. Right, and we'll talk about that, how that may make a difference. You know, that involves possibly its own issues. Probably not so much as far as that's a whole other block, so we'll have to talk about that topic. We'll see a little bit of a hint of that a little bit later today. But that's part of the question. You know, why are you cooking the water without considering the question of how other malachos get involved? But just as far as Bishul is concerned, so this is what the Magen Avraham is entertaining. That would clearly be a very big chiddush if that was the conclusion, that the whole notion of cooking water was only in this case where you need it to be hot, where it's useless in a cold form. But for drinking, this wouldn't be true. So either of those premises, it's just worth noting, whether you take the Ran's perspective or you take the Magen Avraham's point, so then we don't necessarily have such an absolute distinction between water and other substances. And that will have a ripple effect, all these other issues that we have to consider as far as possible differences between Bishul and Bishul solids and Bishul liquids, and the major role that the halacha ma'isa, we know we tend to assume it does make a difference, but it was a topic of debate, as we'll see. So that whole discussion is going to be affected by whether water, liquids in general, are comparable to solids or not. So we see there seems to be two ways to look at that. You could say that there's a fundamental difference between the two, or you could say they're not so different. And these are some of the ways in which they may not be so different. So now as we transition from that point into the question of Bishul Acher Bishul, so a few other points are worth noting, also relevant to what Ari was mentioning a minute ago in terms of the Mishkan. So one question to also keep in mind, also what's also relevant to the question of the Maisa or the result, is Bishul focused on the product in the sense of, what if I cook something in a way that's going to make it disappear? So, for example, the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva, Yerideyus Mitzad Beis, where he writes that if somebody lights a candle on Shabbos, so that's a malacha, as we know, it's a malacha of Havara, but he says it's not a malacha of Bishul, because since ultimately the candle is going to disappear, whatever it is you're lighting is going to go away. So that's not called Bishul, because Bishul assumes that you have a tzorech ledavra hanisbashal, that you're trying to improve something that you're going to have afterwards. And that also has ramifications. If that's part of the understanding of what Bishul is, that it's maisa focused and that you have to have something when you're finished, so then that also tells us something about how the malacha is defined. There is some debate about that, so for it's interesting, there is a Yerushalmi, which doesn't sound like that. Yerushalmi sounds like Haftara on Shabbos in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. Could be a malacha of Bishul as well, even if what you're doing is completely consumed by the fire. I saw once, I think in the Tshuva, Yad Sofer, if I remember correctly, was a descendant of the Chassam Sofer. So he thought that that was hollowed on the machlokas that we've been alluding to about what is the source for malachos in general. Is the source for malacha is the construction of the Mishkan, in which case Bishul would not have involved in any act that completely destroys the item? Or should we say that it extends even to the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, in which case maybe there is such a model, and maybe that's why the Yerushalmi is entertaining that possibility, because as we've mentioned, Yehudah Tal lays down this premise that there's a machlokas, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, about this question, about what is the model for the malachos that we have, and that might be relevant to that question as well.
I just don't understand the Chasam Sofer's point. Anytime you would have, you have malacha of Havara, it should have been Bishul, but because you're...
Maybe it could have been that you'd have, well, not always to be quite Bishul, but you could have, theoretically, when you have an item that's being lit specifically, you could theoretically, I guess, have Havara without Bishul. Figure out what scenarios it applies to. But let's say if you light a candle, something like that, that the take an item and set it on fire. So what? How is that different than Bishul? Maybe it includes Bishul as well. So his point was that if it's going to lead to the item disappearing, so that's what distinguishes it from Bishul. Bishul, you use the fire to improve something and you'll still have it then when you're finished. And in Havara, you're going to end up with nothing. So therefore, they don't overlap. Hi.
Does disappear also include to burn it to a crisp? Or something like that?
To a state of uselessness?
Yeah.
Presumably. Yeah, especially since you see that when it comes to Bishul, that seems to be part of it anyway, that when the food is there but is not useful, you find that already we're lacking in the Bishul component. So presumably, if you can't get any benefit from this item, then it's going to still detract from the Bishul definition.
I guess we're saying that if you light it up to disintegrate, it's not Bishul because it's sort of lacking that happiness, I would assume.
Or it could be even more than that. It could be that it's not Bishul at all, but that's not the definition of Bishul. Right? There's a rough parallel to this, by the way. It comes up, like, for example, you might consider this comparable. So if you want to talk about Melachos Machshavos, if you recall, I don't remember if we talked about it this year, but just to say it in as brief a way as possible, there's a Tosfos on Ayin Gimel Amud Beis that basically makes the point. For brevity's sake, we won't talk about the example that Tosfos is talking about, but there are malachos which are not just inos harach l'gufa, that it's not just you're doing it for a different reason, but the reason is so different that it fails to be that malacha at all. So Tosfos alludes to a possibility that you see that in the malacha of dash, that when you talk about extracting something, it's a malacha of dash, that if you're not interested in the item that's being extracted, so then it's not only that it's a malach shen itzrich l'gufa, that may not be what dash is. Dash is about extracting something for use. And so that's an even more fundamental deficiency, so that even the opinion that holds malach shen itzrich l'gufa is chayev of Yehuda would agree that you're pater in that case. This is very relevant. For example, nursing mothers have this question about pumping on Shabbos. They need to for their own relief, and they're not going to use the milk for the baby. So then the question becomes, maybe that's not only a malacha shen itzrich l'gufa, maybe if you're not interested in that which is being extracted, so then that's simply not dash in the first place, and it's even more kal. So you may have a similar approach here, that Bishul is focused on the result, and if there's no interest in what's going to be produced, so then that's not going to be Bishul, and others will disagree. It's clearly not the only way to see it. And this is a Sefer Yireyim, for example, that the Gemara in Ayin Daled we talked about last week, that talks about throwing a peg into the fire. So there we assumed, and that's the way most assumed, that it's about cooking the peg, that you can cook something that's not food. But the Sefer Yireyim assumes it's about the moisture on the peg. It's about the water that's on the peg that's being cooked. So there, that water is not going to be usable. It's going to disappear. It's going to evaporate. And yet, he's assuming there is Bishul in that context. So it's a little bit of a subject of debate. It also goes to the question of what Bishul is supposed to accomplish. Hi.
But even if you argue that, like, utterly, like, burning something to crisp or having something evaporate, like that case, if it started cold and you put it in the oven, to a certain point you cook it to an ideal temperature, and the fact that you left it in the oven, so then that would be your Bishul. The fact that you left it in the oven, then it would continue to do something else, which is not a malacha. But doesn't you still do the melacha while it was getting to that point, it passed the...
Except if it was never accessible, and you knew it was never going to be accessible, so then the same way, if we want to use that parallel to dash that we used a minute ago, that dash, the elements, the melacha were there, but it's your lack of interest in the product that makes it not dash. So to here, you're leaving in the oven intentionally. That was an issue, by the way. There were some svarim that asked that question about the sugya of hidur pas betana. Right, that maybe you should say, everything goes back to that Gemara, that maybe we should say an Eitzah to this guy, right, you just leave it there. There is some discussion.
Because it would just burn to crisp.
Right. So that maybe if the guy doesn't want to be chayiv, then maybe we should say like this, that instead of coming into the whole shiloh taking it out, then maybe go the other way, leave it there forever. Sorry? That was the consideration, that maybe the question is, again, will it all go back to the original intent of the original master? When it gets into all the lumbus of how what happens afterwards affects the original intent. So what Jonathan's asking is, where you know the whole time you're going to do this, you throw something into the intent for it to be burnt to a crisp, so then it's easier to say that that was never bishul. But there was a suggestion that some of the svarim were asking that maybe that should be an eitzah for even the guy who planned on cooking something, that if he does chew in the middle, maybe we shouldn't get involved with the question of whether you take it out of the oven, let's have him leave it in the oven, and then he'll be fucked for that reason. There is such a discussion.
So why? What's the answer?
Yeah, so that's, we spent enough time on that, so you know, I spent a lot of time on this.
But the fact that we don't say that, though, shows that he, because for a split second, it gets to the point of Oshakol Tzorach on his chayav, no?
No, because there's at least two issues. First of all, there again, the question of that whole sugya, one of the questions is when your initial das was to do a malacha, so is it that you're just going to be saved from the carbon, or is it that the malacha is neutralized? But also, same point, but it's a different way of saying it, that that's a key difference. There, the guy was intending to bake it, but here you know that you're never going to get this out of the fire, it's going to burn to a crisp. So it's certainly no worse than that case of dash where you're not interested in what's coming out, but you're fully extracting this item. So as far as the elements are concerned, you have the element of dash 100%, but your lack of interest in the product is what saves you. So this is even more, actually.
Your lack of interest automatically makes it that it's going
to
stay there.
Possibly. When it comes to dash, if you want to use that parallel, so there's a shiloh. So let's say the nursing mothers, so is it enough that they extract the milk and then they throw it out? Or there are those who say that it has to be, for example, pumped into a kli that's soapy, right, so that it'll never be usable, so that there's an in-between. So that's perhaps that question. Right, is it all enough that you have no intent to use it if you plan on throwing it out, or does it have to be never usable in between? It's a little bit of a parallel question. Okay, so all of this is relevant. Basically, all the points that we've said so far are relevant when you consider the question of ein bishul acher bishul. Because lurking in the background is a number of questions. Right, what is the purpose of being bishul something? Right, is bishul just a action that you do in order to get to a certain result? And you have that result already, so there isn't anything to be gained from a malacha perspective by doing it again. Is bishul about a ma'isa, in which case maybe you are doing that ma'isa again? Is that ma'isa defined by its result, and therefore it's not called a ma'isa? Essentially, all of these questions that we've considered so far converge when you consider the question of bishul acher bishul. And parenthetically, so the point that we made before, it's actually a very useful contrast, is you find the discussion as well of ein bishul acher bishul by Basa B'chalav, and the point that we made a few minutes ago is highly relevant. That maybe there, when we say bishul acher bishul, we say that the issue is that it's all about the creation. It's all about the creation of that. Actually, could be interpreted two ways. It's all about what is created. It's all about the product that comes out when it comes to bishul basa b'chalav. So there you might say, okay, so for sure in bishul acher bishul, if I already have my cheeseburger and I stick it into the oven again, so then I'm not doing anything more. The cheeseburger existed as a michshol before, it's going to be the same michshol afterwards, I'm not doing anything new. But maybe when it comes to Shabbos, I'm more focused on the ma'aser. So this is a discussion the Achronim had in the Yerideya. When they talk about bishul basa b'chalav, so the question comes up, it's really a fascinating question, which is a little bit off our topic now, but it's interesting to note that the issue is considered when we talk about bishul basa b'chalav from a couple of angles, because On the one hand, there is the assumption that ain bishul achad bishul by basu b'chalav, which makes a lot of sense in light of what we just said a second ago. Right? If it's all about creating this michshul, so it's no different once you cook it again. But there are many poskim who will even extend it to if the items were cooked by themselves. So if you had meat that was cooked already, or if you had milk that was cooked before, so then to cook them again, you're not going to be chayav deraisa even if you combine them then, which is a bigger chiddush, because then you are creating the iser. So why should it matter that it was cooked before? So just for your knowledge, that's a whole discussion, which is relevant to the famous question, whether you violate bishul basu b'chalav deraisa if you work at McDonald's making cheeseburgers. Very important question, because it has all kinds of practical ramifications, because basu b'chalav deraisa is asur b'hana, and rabbanan isn't, so it has huge ramifications. And especially because in America, all the milk that you're going to use was already cooked before, was already pasteurized. So if you take the view of the poskim, that if the elements were independently cooked, so then there's no additional issur to cook them again, so then it's going to be highly relevant. So this is a bigger surprise, because it's easier to understand why if they've been combined once, there's no further issur to combine them again. But the notion that even by itself, items that were mevushal, there's no issur to be mevushal the second time, it's a bigger chiddush.
Why don't we assume that milk is like water?
That it reverts to its stage. But here, once you talk about pasteurization, so it's interesting, it helps you understand the Ran a little bit, right? Because you'll say that, okay, you maybe won't be able to tell the difference between the milk because it will revert to its cold state. But the whole point of pasteurizing it is that it does have this chemical effect. So maybe that helps us to understand a little bit what the Ran is saying, that there is a change that even if our naked eye or hands are not able to perceive how that change has happened. It looks to us like it's the same, but there is something that takes place on a molecular level, and that is significant. So the pasteurization perhaps illustrates that, makes us a little more able to understand it.
It seems like most of us can not agree with Ron.
In terms of the status of water, let's say, but the fact that we see cases where we do it for a purpose even after it's going to revert to a different state, and we know it's going to revert to a different state, that helps us to understand a little bit what he's getting at, that there could be that there is something more than just the temperature that's significant. Hi.
Are there any posts which make any chalukim between water and other liquids?
Well, yeah, when you get to soup, you know, you see there's what to, halach l'mais, if it really makes a difference. But we can understand intellectually why it may make a difference, right? That if you have soup that was cooked and then cooled down, so it's still different than it was before it was cooked. Right? So if you can say that water, there's no difference, it's all about the temperature, so some liquids, there is a difference. Right? Sometimes there is a clear difference, so we'll have to get to that. We'll have to see a little bit more how these parts come together. So basically, what Basu B'chalav illustrates a little bit, so is there some general rule when we talk about bishul, ain bishul achad bishul? And indeed, like we said, the Acharonim contrast Basu B'chalav with Hilcha Shabbos for that purpose, but it's a little bit difficult. One of the problems in trying to make a comparison is because if we will, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, if we are going to distinguish between solids and liquids in Hilcha Shabbos, so then we have to know what's the default. You know, what's the default rule by Hilcha Shabbos? What's the rule and what's the exception? Yesh bishul achad bishul, because, as we'll see, it seems to be the case with liquids. Or ein bishul achad bishul, because that seems to be the case with solids. So we have to figure out what's the default and what's the exception in order to say, oh, well, basu b'chalav is this and Shabbos is this. Why are they the same? Why are they different? We have to first figure out which one is which. Okay, if you're interested in the Makoros about the Basu B'chalav, I'm happy to give you some, but again, trying to not overload with too many side Makoros. But anybody who wants to take a look at some of those sources, let me know.
If it's, you're saying, to be able to learn it out for something else, meaning you said that.
What do you mean to start the conversation, to be able to compare? Like, if I want to know, okay, Basu B'chalav, the rule is this, and Shabbos, the rule is that, why are they either the same or different? So we first have to know, what's the rule for Shabbos? So you say, well, ain't bishul achad bishul. Oh yeah, what about davar lach? Okay, well, yesh bishul achad bishul. Oh yeah, what about solids? So we have to figure out which one is the rule and which one is the exception in order to even start the question of whether they're the same or whether they're different. So is there a klal in general when it comes to the malachos that ain blank acher blank? Right, is that a notion that we have overall?
Well,
sometimes
it's physically impossible.
Well, if you say sometimes, then it's not the klal. Right, I guess. So sometimes it's not relevant, maybe.
Right, like you can't do a new binyan on her binyan, I guess.
Because you can do binyan on top of binyan.
Right, I guess
so. In general, there was a discussion about this. There was a Tosefta, which sounds like that a little bit, depending on how you read it. I didn't put that on. Again, I'm happy to... It sounds like the question how to read it, Tosefta, which maybe I'll give it to you tomorrow if you want to take a look at it. The question how to read it, it sounds like it might be saying that there's a klal in general, aim blank after blank, in Hilchos Shabbos, that malachas don't happen twice. And others will assume that it's really a case-by-case basis, that it depends whether or not it makes sense, as Ari was just suggesting, or maybe put a little bit differently, that every malacha has its own logic to it, and therefore it's going to depend whether it should be applied maybe for other reasons. So to give you two examples where Achronim drew contrasts, so this year I think we talked about the Malacha of Tochin in the outside of Shir context. I think we talked about it as one of the Lamatas Malacha series on a Wednesday. So when it comes to Malacha of Tochin, so many assume that by Tochin we have a klal of Ein Tochin Acher Tochin. Although, what emerges if you see the discussions there, there are at least three different scenarios of what tochen after tochen, grinding after grinding, would mean. Does that mean that you have something that was ground up, then came back together somehow, and you ground it up again? Or does it mean that you ground something up, so you violated tochen, but now you grounded it up in an even finer way? So tochen on top of tochen. Or does it mean you have something which was naturally separated, and then came together, so the malach of tochein doesn't apply. So the language of ein tochein acher tochein, to the extent that it exists, is involved in a number of different contexts which are not all the same. It's actually relevant to Hilchos Pesach, if you want to throw this in, because there is a discussion about how one could fulfill bir chametz on Shabbos or Yontif. And so let's say if you don't have a flushing toilet in your house, in the time of the Mishnah, you don't have such a thing. So, for example, there is a discussion about what possible venues are available if you take the opinion, the Gemara, the Ein Bir, Chametz, Elul, B'Sreifa. So then you have a problem. You can't do Havara on Shabbos. And you call it Bishul. And if you would call that Bishul, then you can't do Bishul either. But if there are other ways to get rid of Chametz, so then what possibly is relevant. So what if you crumble something up and throw it into the air? So that was my hope for showing whether that's over or not. There's a lot more about that. I ain't too much of a problem about that. So whether that's, the Mishnah mentions that as a possibility, the whole discussion whether that would be Zora, if you crumple up chametz and throw it into the air. And there's also a discussion of whether it's tochen. If you take bread and you crumble it up into smaller pieces, so do you say that that's tochen? And the language some of the Rishonim have is that no, ain't tochen acher tochen. You already ground the flour up to make the bread in the first place, and then it was then reformulated into bread, so then there's no additional tochen after that. So the language of ain tochen acher tochen is subject to a lot of different definitions. And the Chazon Ish says, the Chazon Ish in Hilchos Tochen has a discussion about this, and he says that don't confuse this with ain bishul acher bishul. Just because you have the aims and the aims, don't think that it's the same thing. That there's just that there's two different malachos that have two different rules. And for one reason or another, it's shy to talk about repeating the malacha, but they don't really have any kind of common element other than that. And it's not because there is a basic principle in Shabbos of aim malacha after malacha, aim same malacha after same malacha. So the Chazon Ish over there are talking about Tochein, so he has a little bit of a discussion about this, that one shouldn't draw a parallel necessarily between Tochein and Bishul just because you could use the phrase in blank after blank in both of them. It's because of the inherent aspects of the Malacha that's going to play a role there. Similarly, it's a Tshuva, the Tshuva is Dvar Yehoshua. We mentioned him a lot last semester because his Tshuva is about Hanukkah. So he has Chuva talking about Ma'amer. So Ma'amer is the malacha of gathering things together. So there is a discussion. Ma'amer is its fascinating malacha of itself. This discussion, do you say Ein Imur Acher Imur? There's no malacha of Ma'amer on top of Ma'amer. So there, the Eglei Tal seems to maintain such a thing, which again could be for other reasons. I'll mention in a second, but the Dvar Yeshua takes issue with the Eglei Tal, and he says, no, you can't compare Ma'amer, the way he has it, differently than Chazanish. He says, Tochein and Vishul, he'll put together for the Ein Achers, but not Ma'amer, because he says, when it comes to Vishul or Tochein, his assumption is both of those malachos can be seen in the same perspective, that they're both about taking something from its natural state and doing something to it that changes it from its natural state. So, cooking it to a new form, or grinding it into a new form. So in both cases, it's not shy to do it twice. Once you've taken it from its natural state, and you've made it into something new, so then there's no idea of coming back and doing it again. But when it comes to ma'amer, so it's all about bringing it together in a pile. So if you have something that you brought together in this pile, and then it got scattered, so then it was unma'amered, and then you can re-ma'amer it, and it's not, there's no general rule of a blank after blank that should be extended from, as he put it, Bishul and Tochein together to ma'amer. Now when it comes to ma'amer, as you know, there's no, there could be other reasons for such a pool. And then it could be that ma'amer has to be only b'gidulei karka, it only has to be only when the way that it's originally grown from the ground, and therefore once you're talking about re-ma'amering something, it's already an issue of lack of g'dulei karka, lack of makom g'dula, lack of other issues within ma'amer. So in general, what emerges from the past few minutes is a couple of points. One is that you could ask a question, is there any klal in Hilchos Shabbos of the Ein Malacha or Acher Malacha? And it might be, it's not to say like that, but we see some of the discussions of some of the Gedolei Achronim who say that, no, that there isn't necessarily a klal, that there are malachos where that makes sense, and either you could then make a sub-klal and say, like the Dvar Yeshua was saying, that if the malacha is all about changing something natural to something enhanced, so then that can only happen once. Or you could say it's a very specific issue, that every malacha has its own details to it, and some of the details are such that it's not shy to do it twice. But other than that, there isn't any such exception. So that all goes, again, to trying to understand what is it about Bishul. So is Bishul about our end result? Is it about the Maisa HaBishul? Maybe it could happen twice. Or how could perhaps liquids and solids perhaps be different as far as this is concerned. So let's just lay some more elements on the table, and then we'll continue this tomorrow. Hopefully we'll finish up the Marmar Koma set tomorrow. So you find also that there seems to be a machlokas, Rambam and other Rishonim, about whether whatever issue we have with Bishul, that Bishul has to be needed. So does that mean that once it hits Michael Ben Kersoy, it's no longer needed, that some of the Rishonim maintained? Right? Like you saw, for example, of the Rashi, such an idea. Or do you say, as the Rambam seems to maintain, that as long as there's any improvement, so then you're still going to have a violation of Bishul, which may go to a definitional issue in the Malach of Bishul. Is Bishul about enhancing something at all, or is it about some actual conversion from inedible to edible, or maybe something else, but something significant and not just a matter of degrees? So this relates to the issue of solids versus liquids. So when it comes to liquids, so there were many Rishonim, and it seems to be halacha l'maaseh the case as well, who assume that there is a distinction between liquids and solids, which makes a lot of sense based on some of the things we've seen so far. That if we assume that liquids really do revert to their original state, so then that can be done while solids aren't redundant, because even if solids cool down, but the fundamental change is still there. Cooked meat that's cold is still cooked meat. It doesn't become raw again. However, there are some Rishonim who don't distinguish. Right? And the Ran, I don't think I put the Ran on the list, but the Ran is on the Afchav Beis, Bedape Harif. Sorry, did I put it on? Right, the Beis Yosef quotes the Ran, right? But did I put the Ran specifically? Beis Yosef quotes a bunch of Rishonim together. So the Ran you can take a look at, especially if you have time tomorrow. So the Ran quotes Rabbeinu Yonah, that Rabbeinu Yonah makes this distinction that we're familiar with. And the Ran says he doesn't understand it. What should the distinction be? That just like when you have solid food and the food cools down, so it's still considered to be cooked. So too, when you have liquids, so even if they cool down, they cool down completely, it was cooked once. So now what emerges, with a little background that you know from your esoteric awareness, the Drasha Saran, as is pointed out by the Sefer Primosha, how can you understand this Ran? Right, the Ran is L'shitaso with the Drashos.
Right. The there does create change.
Correct. Right, so the Ran L'shitaso, it's an interesting L'shitaso. Again, you can see the Primosha discusses this, that the Ran in his commentary to the Riff on Shabbos is L'shitaso in the Ran and the Drashos, that there is a physical change to the water that transcends the temperature change. And therefore, if you want to say that you can't cook something twice, it should apply to liquids as well. And therefore, no distinction. Halacha, we don't assume like that. But we do assume the premise of bishul achar bishul. So how do we know bishul achar bishul? And how do we know that such a premise exists? So, is there a source for it in the Gemara Masechta Shabbos? So, the Rush, well, first, is there a source in the Mishnah? Right, so which Mishnah seems to be the source? So, Kuf Mem Hei sounds like it's the source, right? So, what is it talking about over there? That, in terms of soaking meat in hot water, so that you can do if it was cooked from before Shabbos. So that writes the Mordechai. The Mordechai quotes from the Yireim, from the Blazim Yimetz, that shows you in Bishul Achar Bishul, that because it was cooked before, so then you can soak it in hot water now. That may possibly be the source, and it's more explicitly stated in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Mishnah Berurah, I think all these marvelous, that we have this principle that in Bishul Achar Bishul. The Tosfos HaRash commenting on that Mishnah. See the Tosfos HaRash? I think that was on the list, right? What does the Tosfos HaRash say? That it doesn't mean Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. Why? Because it's obvious, Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. Right? Which is itself an interesting statement to say that we don't even need a source. It tells you something about how he perceives the Malacha. That if it's already done once, it just doesn't even make sense. That there isn't a model doing it again. That's itself a statement. But the Rush says it must be a different source, which is a little bit similar to something Ari Snyder mentioned before, that maybe we're concerned about other malachas. Maybe it's tikkun manis, maybe some kind of immaculate passage. The meat is perfected by being soaked in the hot water, and that's the concern. And therefore the mission addresses that. But according to the Rush, you don't have to say even this principle that any bishul achar bishul, because it's self-evident. So then, does it basically emerge that everyone agrees, Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, when it comes to at least solid foods and Hilchos Shabbos? So it kind of sounds like it, except for Rabbeinu HaGadol, the Rambam. The Rambam is a little bit tricky, because the Rambam uses that one tricky word when talking about Bishul Achar Bishul. What's that word? Gets us a little bit confused as to whether or not it's really mutter. It's that word in Hilchos Shabbos that we don't really like to see. It's pater, right? Because the Rambam says that to do so is pater. So then that raises the question, so does it mean to say that it's actually us in Midrabanan? That it's only mutter d'araisa, but Midrabanan it's us? So that would be very significant. That would have a huge impact on Halacha L'maisa. So that's a discussion, I'll just mention it briefly, and then we'll We'll move on tomorrow. So the Eglay Tal assumes that the Rambam is talking about something else. That maybe what the Rambam is saying is that, no, it's mutter, there's no isser of bishul achar bishul, even midrabanan. But when he says pater, he's concerned about something else. He's concerned about the issue of chazara, that to put something back on the fire on Shabbos, that itself is an isser drabanan, independent of how cooked it was. So therefore, the Rambam is saying that if you were to put something back on the fire, so then that would be pater, meaning asr midrabanan, because it's only the Yisra Rabbanan of Chazara without being Bishul. But if you did something else that would have been Bishul without being on the fire, so then that would be Mutter. It's a little bit problematic, as Rabbi Willig points out, that the Rambam talks about the laws of Chazara elsewhere, so it's hard to say that that's what he's referring to there. Also an interesting question to ask, this is a different point, but when you say the language of Pater and Hilchos Shabbos, if you're saying it in one breath, if you do it like this, you are pater. So you do it like this, it's an issur d'rabbanan. It sounds like it means that something about that action maintains its issur on a level midrabbanan. Not that there's a new issur d'rabbanan that also happens to apply. Although that's not necessarily a conclusive point. So to say that that's issur d'rabbanan for a different reason, it's probably hard for a couple of reasons. So Rabbi Willig assumes, against the Vilna Gaon, and against others, that the Rambam's Shita is that Bishul Achar Bishul is actually Asa Midrabanan. Which is very significant, especially because the Beis Yosef quotes the Rambam, Beis Yosef that Jonathan mentioned a few minutes ago, quotes the Rambam among those Rishonim, like the Ran, who don't distinguish between solids and liquids. So until a minute ago, that was a kula, right? But now comes out to be a chumrah because the Rambam really will hold that both are asur midrabbanan. So that's an important point. So then the question becomes: what does the Rambam do with the Mishnah? So the Tosa Rashi thought the Mishnah was too obvious; it must mean something else. Maybe now, according to the Rambam, the din isn't even true. So Beis Yosef already addresses this, and the Zachronim explains in a little more detail that the Rambam can interpret the Mishnah as talking about a whole different issur to begin with. The Mishnah is not specifically talking about cooking, it's talking about soaking in hot water. So perhaps that's an issur d'rabbanan of itself because of its general appearance of cooking. So to that, the Rambam says, if something is already cooked, so then this additional isser of soaking in hot water, there's no isser of that. But if you're going to actually cook it again, so then maybe the Rambam taka would hold that that actually is a isser drabanan of cooking. So how exactly all of that plays out, we'll have to, God willing, pick up from tomorrow. John, you want to down for us? Okay, shkaya.